It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Every week, about 60 to 70 trains carrying crude oil from North Dakota's Bakken region travel through Pennsylvania, destined for Philadelphia or another East Coast refinery. Many of those trains travel through or near downtown Pittsburgh. Earlier this year, we discussed what plans are in place should one of those trains derail in our city. Yesterday, Governor Wolf released the recommendations of his hand-picked oil train expert, Dr. Alan Zaremski of the University of Delaware, on what the state can do to shore up crude oil and crude by rail safety. Dr. Zaremski has suggested a number of changes that go beyond what's demanded by the Federal Railroad Administration, and he joins us now by phone to discuss what those are. Dr. Alan Zaremski, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. What concerns do you have about oil train safety in Pennsylvania? What would you like to see the state do to bolster its safety measures? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Dr. Zaremski, what is the derailment risk in Pennsylvania and in the city of Pittsburgh?
The derailment risk, fortunately for most residents of the state, is extremely low. If you look at the statistics, you see that the probability of a derailment to occur is an extremely low event. And then on top of that, there's the probability that in the event of a derailment, there's an actual release. In other words, there's a tank car is ruptured in the derailment, and that reduces the risk even further. And then on top of that, even when there is a release, then there still has to be an ignition of some sort. If you look at the nationwide statistics, and I actually show them in my report, and I'm not going to go through all the statistics in the report, but certainly if you look at the report, you'll see that there have been a very, very limited number of derailments involving CBR trains, and while the probability is low, that doesn't mean there's no risk. And as a result, I took the approach in my report to the governor that let's look at techniques that we can even further reduce the low risk down another notch. And I believe that the recommendations I made in the report are aimed at even further reducing a low risk event lower.
I guess I and perhaps some others listening to this, I am surprised that to hear you say that the risk is low. And I say this because, and certainly I'm not an expert like you are, but we know we have aging infrastructure. We know we have an increased number of these trains carrying crude oil from the Bakken region in North Dakota. So the increased traffic on old infrastructure and rail cars that some experts say need to be reinforced better. There was the recent incident in Philadelphia where a train derailed over the Schuylkill River, and which would seem to have been a lucky event in the sense that the cars didn't plummet into the river. Nobody was seriously injured in that event. It seems like we've been living a precarious existence, but apparently you're saying that's not necessarily the case.
That's correct. I'm not sugarcoating. I'm saying there have been instances. They're very dramatic. They make for very good TV coverage. So they're very widely publicized. But if you look at the report, we're talking about, you can count them on the fingers of one hand for each year. The number of major events that we have. And this is an environment where we're talking about the last couple of years, where, as you said, crude by rail shipments have increased dramatically. Let's talk about the points that you just raised. You raised some very good points, and I want to address them. Let's talk about aging infrastructure. Okay. When most organizations talk about aging infrastructure, they're talking about the highway system. We're talking about the rail system. The railroad industry invest billions of dollars in their infrastructure. Infrastructure is maintained by the railroads themselves, not by the government, at least for over the routes that crude by rail runs. We're not talking about Amtrak or SEPTA or any of the mass transit systems. We're talking about crude by rail run on major railroads. The infrastructure is actually well maintained. The railroad industry learned its lesson about 30 years ago, when at that time there was a situation of deferred maintenance. And since that time, the railroads have been investing billions with a B dollars of their own money into the infrastructure so that, for the most part, the track on which these trains operate on is well maintained, is aggressively inspected. And while I'm saying aggressively inspected, if you read my report, I have a recommendation to make it even more aggressive. But we're not dealing with an aging infrastructure problem.
But let me ask you this. If we're not dealing with an infrastructure problem, are the tracks
an aging infrastructure problem?
If the tracks, as they are currently designed, or the way they have been designed, and the way that they are set up now, were they designed with this amount of traffic in mind? Could anyone have envisioned the oil boom? And if not, the question then becomes, is the infrastructure that's in place capable of handling this increased traffic?
Okay, good question. The track structure that the crude by rail trains operate on are generally mainline tracks. And mainline tracks are, yes, designed for the volume of traffic. And in fact, the volume of traffic on the crude by rail routes would be, for example, less than the volume of the traffic on the very high-density coal routes coming out of Wyoming, for example, which would even see higher densities of track. And by the way, the trains are just as big and just as heavy and even more frequent. So this is not a situation where all of a sudden we're getting brand-new heavy trains that they've never seen before. The axle load, the weight of the trains is controlled, is limited to 286,000 pound gross weight on rail for a rail car, and it has been since roughly since the late 90s. The length of the trains are generally of the order of, if you're dealing with unit trains, they're generally of the order of 10 to 14,000 tons. These are trains that the railroad industry does know how to operate, and it designs a track structure for. Now, like every other infrastructure or every other structural element, track degrades over time and therefore must be aggressively inspected and must be maintained. And the railroads, for the vast majority of applications, and certainly for the mainline track on CBR trains operating in Pennsylvania, the railroads are on top of it. They are maintaining the track. Now, again, if you go to my report, I have specific recommendations on how they can do, how we can improve it even better, because we're looking at reducing the risk. For example. Let me give you an example. A broken rail is one of the big derailment causes both for CBR trains and for freight trains and mainline track. Yet it's a very, very, very rare event. Railroads employ very sophisticated ultrasonic inspection cars to test it. In the United States, there are about 200,000 rail defects that are safely removed each year. By comparison, for the entire country, for all traffic whatsoever, there are less than 200 that fail under a train. So we're looking at 200 out of 200,000. So the 1 in 1,000 range is what we're looking at here. Now, can we do better than that? I think there's some room for improving it. And my recommendation number one, in fact, comes back with some very practical guidelines to the railroads on how I think they can even more laser-focus their inspections on potential problem areas and reduce that risk maybe a little bit more.
And you're calling on the railroads to conduct routine tests. And
no, I'm not talking about routine tests. I'm talking about ongoing maintenance tests in an aggressive manner.
Isn't this happening already?
Yes, but the frequency is one of the issues that you deal with. How often do you come back and test? You know, if you test once a year, that's one level of safety. You know, you made a comment early on that I wanted to go beyond FRA, the Federal Railway Administration standards.
Yes.
And I go well beyond the FRA because the FRA standards track inspection. We'll talk about tank cars as a separate issue. But for track inspection, for example, are minimum safety standards. And I don't and for crude by rail routes, the railroads first of all currently test much more aggressively than called for by FRA, and I want to increase that a bit too. And I have the very specific science-based, risk-based guidelines to help them focus on how to determine what's a good amount of tests to do where on the routes.
You're calling for oil trains to slow down as well. By how much?
I have a recommendation that the railroads adopt a practice that was just recently instituted by one of the major Western railroads to go from to slow down from 40 miles an hour to 35 miles an hour through what they call high-threat urban areas, which are the big cities, which are basically cities of populations of 100,000 or more.
Like
so
ours.
So Pittsburgh and Philadelphia would fall into that category.
Now, someone might ask, how much, you know, asking the trains to slow down from 40 miles per hour to 35 miles per hour when they're going through a big city or a city, as you say, of more than 100,000, someone might ask, how much of a difference is 5 miles an hour really going to make?
Okay. Again, in my report, and I certainly request, ask that you take a look at the report.
I have looked at your report.
I deal with a subject called CPR, or conditional probability of release. That's a term that's used in the industry, and there have been numerous studies that look at what happens if there's a derailment. What's the probability of the tank car being ruptured? Because if there's a derailment, then the tank car doesn't rupture. There's no release of the oil. Then there's no problem. In the sense that there's no catastrophic problem. You know, derailments are not a good thing anyway. But in terms of the events that we're concerned about, fires and explosions, if there's no rupture, there's no fire, there's no explosion. So the studies, and I have, I show some of the studies that are done by very reputable organizations, and in fact that are in the Federal Railway Administration or Department of Transportation orders, and that show that there is definitely a benefit, that there's a reduction in the cumulative probability of the conditional probability of release associated with going from 50 to 40. Now remember, the current speed limit is 50 away from big cities, 40 through the big cities, and I'm recommending they go down to 35. Through Pittsburgh and Philadelphia and any other city with a population of greater than 100,000. The analyses show that there is a definite reduction in conditional probability of release. In other words, the risk that we're dealing with is reduced by a measurable amount.
We're talking with Dr. Alan Zaremski of the University of Delaware, who has just provided recommendations to Governor Wolf on how to make crude by rail safer as the state looks to shore up the oil trains, the safety of trains carrying crude from the Bakken region through Pennsylvania to Philadelphia and the East Coast. If you have a comment or question for Dr. Zaremski, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. There are 27 recommendations here that you have made, and obviously we don't have time to go through all of them, but one of your recommendations calls for Pennsylvania to implement something called positive train control on oil train routes in the Commonwealth. This is something members of Congress, including Senator Casey, have called for in the wake of the deadly passenger train derailment in Philadelphia last May. But there is controversy as to whether positive train control makes sense in the form mandated by Congress, in part partly because it's costly. But there are also questions about the reliability and the maturity of the technology. This doesn't seem to be an easy fix.
No, and the other issue that you deal with positive train control, and I talk about this in my report, is while positive train control is a real critical issue to prevent the derailment, such as the recent Amtrak derailment north of Philadelphia, which is a high-speed derailment on a curve, the number of derailments that have occurred for the CP, for the crude by rail trains that would have been affected by positive train control is a very small percentage of the total. The positive train control addresses overspeed derailments, which is honestly is not a big issue for big heavy freight trains because you're not going to get a big heavy freight train going 100 miles an hour around a curve. That you just physically can't get up there. It will prevent collisions, but the only collision that resulted in a major event so far was a collision that was a result of a broken axle where the one train derailed, fouled the other track, and then the CB and the CBR train came along and hit it. And honestly, positive train control would not have been able to address that because it just the root cause of that event was the broken axle. So that's what going after the broken axle. Positive train control does not improve the safety related to broken rails, broken wheels, broken axles, track geometry. Again, I go through in my report a fairly careful analysis of what are the causes of derailments nationwide in the state of Pennsylvania and for crude oil trains themselves. And you can see that, you know, that positive train control does not affect the majority. So while there are absolute benefits associated with positive train control, and I do recommend that that the railroads implement positive train control as expeditiously as possible, I'm not going to sit here and say that's the absolute number one priority. In fact, it wasn't even a primary recommendation of mine. It was a secondary recommendation of mine.
These trains are obviously involved in interstate commerce, and there are federal laws regulating the industry. What freedom does a state like Pennsylvania have to implement tighter rules?
That's an excellent question. And the reality of it is most of my recommendations that are for the railroads cannot be mandated by law by the state. So this is a question of the railroads working with the state. Now, I will tell you, I've sat in several meetings with the state, and as you've seen from the press release, there's been ongoing communication with the state, with the railroads by the state. And the states, at least in where I've been involved, the states have a very positive attitude. And the railroads have a very positive attitude towards this event, a positive attitude towards safety. And while I can't say they're going to implement all my recommendations, the sense I get is that a lot of my recommendations that they think that make practical sense for them and that are implementable in a reasonable manner to them while improving safety, I expect to see implemented.
And even though you feel that the railroad companies are taking a positive approach, in many cases we trust that they are doing the right thing. How should we be monitoring the companies to make sure that they are following best practices?
Well, there are a couple of ways to monitor the railroads. The state of Pennsylvania has a rail inspector group that's part of the that coordinates with the Federal Railway Administration, and the Federal Railway Administration and the state inspectors underneath them have the ability of doing some verification. Just to pick an example, we go back to the broken rail example. I talk in terms of maintain a specific service defect rate that should be used to schedule inspections. The most recent update in Federal Railway Administration standards actually adopted that approach. And so it's possible to go to the railroads, or certainly for the Federal Railway Administration, which means the state can go through the Federal Railway Administration to the railroads and say, what is your service defect rate that you're following? And we can monitor it in that way. You can argue that the bottom line is ultimately going to be whether we have an upturn, a downturn in derailments. And of course, they should monitor that. But there are practical steps that can be taken either working with the railroads or working with the FRA to ensure, you know, to monitor the, you know, the practices of the railroad to ensure that they are in keeping with best practice and in keeping with the kind of safety approach that that certainly I'm recommending and the state would like to see.
Oil train expert Dr. Alan Zaremski joining us from Delaware. He has come up with a list of recommendations for Governor Wolf, which he is now studying to make crude oil and crude by rail safety, crude by rail trains safer. Dr. Zaremski, we thank you so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much for having me.
Coming up, if your child receives a trophy purely for participating in a sport, has he or she earned it? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.